FinTech. It's a buzzy space with lots of different things going on. But how does it relate to IT services? How should managed services providers think about it? And why do you care? Today, I'm talking to Stephen Taylor. Now, Professor Taylor is a good way of saying it, is he's a professor of finance at New Jersey Institute of Technology. And he's got a background in both technology and finance. He's been an analyst and researcher and consulted with businesses of all sizes. Professor Taylor, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks for having me, Dave. And like you mentioned, I have a bit of an orthodox background. I'm a professor now, but worked in the industry for 10 years, large institutions, medium size, and also a lot of smaller startups nowadays. So I got a broad experience.
Plus, that's a cool title. And so we've got to stick with being a professor. So I asked you on because I will admit, you know, my listeners and I are deep in infrastructure and IT management and all of that. But as I track and think about this space known as FinTech, financial technology, I kind of admit that I'm looking at this with a little bit of the puzzlement of saying, okay, I need to wrap my head around this. Can we start with really a basic piece of, can you define for me what you think FinTech means when we're talking about it?
Yeah, sure. Like, so FinTech broadly speaks, stands for financial technology, and technology has been applied to finance for decades. Like, what distinguishes a newer FinTech company from, say, like NASDAQ when it started up? I think there's a few different components right there. Like, so first, you're going to have a major technological component to the FinTech company, but it also has to be innovative in the sense where it's trying to improve upon or refine a traditional financial service. Think of examples like in the lending space, for example. Like, how did you traditionally get a loan? You would go to a bank, you would talk to a lender, they would approve your loan. There was a lot of manpower in that process, whereas now you can have companies like LendingClub, for example, where it's almost all automated peer-to-peer, and a lot of technology has replaced that human element. That's one example of a FinTech company.
These are companies that are focused on using technology to solve financial problems. So when let's link this to companies that are, say, less than 100 people or less than $10 million in revenue, is just kind of a rough line to say that's the smaller end of the market. We can generally agree with that. How do these technologies and these innovations in FinTech apply to companies of these sizes?
A lot of times financial services, you know, you think of the big behemoths, like large banks, large asset managers, where you really needed this size in order to make the dollars make sense at the end of the day. But nowadays, with all the new technology tools we have available, smaller size companies who are really strong in the IT infrastructure side and software development automation side can do the work of literally like hundreds of thousands of people. And a lot of times they're going to be benefiting from the rewards of this. If you cut out the boilerplate there, you're going to be able to offer a better price at the end of the day to your customers.
Is this a category that includes things like point of sale technologies and e-commerce technologies and marketplace technology, or is it a subset? Help me relate it to those kind of more familiar, like point of sale tech or e-commerce technology.
I tend to think it's a little bit distinct from like e-commerce or point of sale. They have some similarities in the sense of like the automation aspect where they're trying to improve upon traditional processes. But like FinTech's really targeted more on the finance side. I get a couple of like main areas for it. Like lending was one example. Asset management, automated asset management's another example. Cryptocurrency management nowadays, things along these lines. So generally, like taking a traditional financial service, try to improve that via automation, offer a lower price, and that's broadly a what we would consider a FinTech company.
Okay, gotcha. So in particular, they're taking an existing financial process and they're technologically improving it, and that's the investment there. So it sounds like, and I want to make sure that I'm understanding, that in the typical small business, they are a consumer for a FinTech product more than like in, i.e. they're using these new technologies and new capabilities versus implementing it themselves. Like if I think about a typical law office or a dental office or a plumber, these typical small business examples, they are customers of FinTech companies more than they are implementers. Is that fair assessment?
They could be, absolutely. Like if you're a small company and you want to, say, set up a 401k system for your employees, you could do this through a fintech company like Wealthfront or Betterment, for example, who tend to offer a much lower rate than, say, a traditional large asset manager. But you could also be creating a fintech company. I mean, if you're a small business, I think this is like the prime area, like small numbers of people to mid-sized companies. These are the tend to be the sizes of a lot of the new fintech startups we're seeing.
So give me a little bit of, like, you know, and I probably can't name somebody specific, but if you can, that'd be great. Give me an example of some of sort of the small business success stories to focus on as you're trying to understand this space a little bit better.
Like, I really like to think of the story of like the Wealthfront and Betterment that I gave, the example I gave before. So these are both companies that started off probably going on a little over 10 years now as asset managers. So their main goal was to look at this traditional process of financial advisement. You save up some extra capital, you want to invest it, you don't feel like you're an expert. And what did you traditionally do? You would go and find a human advisor. That advisor would invest your money on your behalf, but take quite a fee. Usually like 1%, 1.5% was not uncommon per year. And that adds up over 20, 30 years, that becomes rather substantial, and compounding takes into effect. So both of these, they started small, you know, like a dozen people or so. And the question is, how can we automate this process? How can we choose better securities? How can we have a better allocation algorithm? And how can we automate rebalancing and then trade through at very low commissions? And the overall product, I think, is substantially stronger than a lot of what you see in the traditional service.
Okay. So let's dive in then a little bit on some of the risks here, because that seems like that's the big area where this technology space would meet with an infrastructure one. As you've given me that example, instantly I'm coming to sort of those compliance kind of questions. What are the big risks that you think of that fintech companies are struggling with on the technology front that need to be thought of from a protection perspective?
Exactly. And just to go with this example, you can, like, one risk you can imagine if you're automating rebalancing and execution of securities, that the code and infrastructure behind that has to be about as solid as it possibly gets. You know, if something goes wrong, if something goes haywire, suddenly you're bankrupt and the next day. And that there's been more than one story of that happening. So you have to be really really, really strong IT infrastructure, making sure all the execution pipelines are working well, making sure you have lots of unit testing and a lot of eyes on the code and people monitoring it on a daily basis.
I mean, that's kind of the answer that I would expect is consistently. Has the current landscape, and I'll use either like the pandemic as an accelerant or the rise in cyber crime, are either of those like the big new ones that you're worried about and seeing results from? Are those risk areas?
So for cybercrime in particular, in the lending space, the paper lending space, that's the major issue. And to give an example of that, I think like when Prosper first started, the Prosper and LendingClub being the two largest peer-to-peer lending platforms, when it started 15 years ago, or say now, like the original people that would apply were the ones that had very, very low credit quality, that were taking loans for, like, you know, 25 to 35%, and that couldn't get a loan anywhere else. And there was a lot of just fraud built into the system. So they would basically go, they would get their loan funded, and they would take the money and run. How do you prevent that as a lender? How do you build fraud analytics in there? Because that's the major loss that people have on the platform. If you can convince them that there's not going to be an excessive amount of fraud, then you can improve the overall platform.
Okay, gotcha. So what's the big risk that you're thinking about in the next, say, 12 to 24 months that you think is going to be the big one that no one's talking about?
I think I'm always really concerned about a major equity market pullback. We've seen, like, the stock market, you know, after COVID, after the government stimulus has just been going through the roof. It's up 60-70% or now, and it's right. It's very likely we're going to have a pullback at some point during the next 6 months to a year. Reason why, who knows? Maybe we have a resurgence in COVID. Who knows what's going to happen?
But right.
once something like that happens, people who are invested in these asset management platforms are ultimately going to see a decline. And sometimes people just blame. They blame the platform, whereas it was really just more of a broader, anywhere you invested the capital, it's gonna decline. So the things like that kind of worry me.
Gotcha. So you hadn't, one of the things you hadn't brought up as a risk yet, and I want to ask about it, because something we do talk about on the show a lot is the idea of regulation. And as government is getting more interested in big tech in general, technology in general, and of course now poking at some of these systems. Are there government policies that you're thinking about that are kind of the wild card to keep an eye on right now?
In terms of like tech government regulation, like definitely the sort of antitrust ramp up in the Biden administration is something that I've been watching, but it seems like they're targeting the FANG names, like Google, Amazon, for example. I know as probably both you and I as sort of tech fans, I hope the government doesn't screw up Google. You know, Google's a great company. I love what they do. It's not perfect, but they've changed just they've changed the work environment, the culture, just how things work in tech so much over the years. And I hope they don't get broken up, but we'll see. I think the antitrust is the big issue there.
Yeah, I mean, interesting you into Google, because they are in my mind not the the lead candidates for actions. You know, when I stack rank who I think is most at risk, they're middle of the pack, not leading the pack. So what's if you wanted to give advice to companies that spend their time thinking about IT infrastructure, be that they've come from a world of legacy on-prem, or they're the ones now managing your AWS, your GCPs, your Azures, where are the areas that they need to make sure that they're really thinking about to be relevant and helpful as it relates to fintech?
Yeah, I can speak to a few examples I've seen in fintech startups. So I've been in startups where like all the IT infrastructure is running like the Swiss train system, where you basically never see it and it's perfect and that it's running great. And I've been in places where it's just a complete disaster, where you're having failures, nightly production job failures, and you're getting 2 a.m. emails day after day. And I know like people would definitely prefer the former of the two as modelers and not non-IT experts. How can companies get involved in this? I think there's a lot at the architecture phase that can be done on the early stage. What I've seen as a traditional sort of ramp up will be like you get a group of people together, 3, 4, 5 people, you start a company. We use GitHub for code. We use AWS, Azure for cloud computing services. But then we get to the point where we're not using them as effectively as one might need. Like we have an EC2 instance running nonstop, but I'm using it maybe 5-10% of the time. This is where if somebody comes in and gives a nice feasibility study and say, hey, just put a box, you know, you can pay 25% of the cost for this box internally on-prem, it's going to make a lot more sense just to run that. And then how do you scale that out? How do you sort of architect this a way to scale things out as you grow? Having that in place in the beginning, I think would solve the vast majority of problems I've seen where it becomes rather chaotic at times.
So it sounds like I want you to verify a way of thinking for me, because it sounds like, particularly based on the way that you're talking to them, that these organizations as they grow up are used to consuming technology on that subscription model. Is that fair? Is that the best way that they do it? What are the ways that are best to work with these kinds of companies?
Indeed, I've seen it as a sort of pay-as-you-go model in the beginning. Like one example where I think we had a very effective use of AWS about like 7 or 8 years ago, we had certain jobs that we would run for asset allocation that were Monte Carlo jobs that were very CPU intensive. So we would split a job across like 1,000 cores, and it would each core would do their own thing, and then everything comes back and we aggregate results. But we use it for like an hour, but then we need the scale. It wouldn't have made sense to buy all that in-house machinery, but it made a lot of sense to use AWS for that, and so pay on demand in that case. So I think like cases like that are good as opposed to like just reserving 1,000 cores constantly and then paying and running up the bill there, which I've seen happen in other cases.
Gotcha. Well, Professor, thanks for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. And how can people get in touch with you if they're interested in asking additional follow up questions?
Feel free to email me or smt@njit.edu. Be great to talk to you. I do a lot of quant finance consulting as well, and always trying to get involved with new and exciting companies and opportunities. So feel free to reach out.
Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.